The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And now we step into the lunchtime doctor here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Brittany Dean. How are you?
Good afternoon, Tuska. I am doing well. We had a very fun-filled weekend. You know, yesterday was World Steel Pan Day.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was such an amazing event I was able to attend. And it really was something that I think everybody should experience, especially, you know, because it's all culture and it's something that we're celebrating now. So it really was a great event. So I had a fun-filled weekend. I hope everybody who's listening also had a great weekend and a relaxing one as well.
And today's topic, what are we getting into today?
So today we will be getting into the topic of pancreatitis. And not a lot of people may have heard that word before, but it really is something that we see commonly in the hospital. And it's something that I think that we should discuss because it can be preventable in a lot of the cases. And during today's topic, we will find out why. So as much as we are talking about pancreatitis today, of course, we welcome any questions, anything that anybody would like to know about medicine. Just feel free to call in or leave a WhatsApp, and of course, we will address it as well.
And the numbers are 625-2257 and of course 306-1065.
Yes. So today I will start off by talking about what exactly is the pancreas. So Tuska, do you know what the pancreas is, or have you ever heard of that part of our body before?
Yes, I have. That is the organ that filters. Is it like a big filter, or is that the kidneys?
So that's actually, well, the kidney is also a filter, yes. And, well, the liver is responsible for metabolism of toxins, etc. in our body. But the pancreas is that organ that is located behind the stomach itself. And it has two roles. I would say that it plays a crucial role in both digestion and regulating our blood sugar. So when we're talking about diabetes, pancreas is actually the organ that is related to diabetes.
Mm.
Now, when we're talking about its function, there are two functions of the pancreas. We call them exocrine and endocrine. The exocrine function will involve producing a lot of the digestive enzymes. So, you know, all those enzymes that are responsible for breaking down proteins, fats, carbohydrates, everything that is responsible for breaking down these larger molecules, these enzymes are produced by the pancreas. And of course, the endocrine function, like I mentioned before, it is involved in the production of hormones like insulin and glucagon, which is used to regulate blood sugar levels. And these things become very important when we're talking about diabetes. But today we will be talking about its exocrine function, meaning the function where it produces the digestive enzymes itself, those enzymes that are used to break down the larger molecules of our food. And this is how we'll see how this comes into play when we're talking about pancreatitis.
And can you explain what pancreatitis is and how it affects the pancreas?
Right. So the word pancreatitis itself, so every time we see itis in a word, it actually means inflammation. So pancreatitis actually refers to the inflammation of the pancreas. And I would say that this inflammation by itself really occurs when these digestive enzymes are produced by the pancreas and it actually begins to attack itself. And this causes damage to the pancreas itself. So in producing these digestive enzymes that are supposed to be breaking down these larger molecules of food, what tends to happen is that they start to attack the pancreas. And the person that is experiencing pancreatitis will experience a lot of different signs and symptoms, which we will get on later into the program. But pancreatitis by itself, I would say that with every disease that we usually do see, we see something called an acute phase or something called a chronic phase. Now, pancreatitis can be acute, meaning that it can be very sudden in its onset. And when it becomes, when it's in this acute phase and it's very sudden, this can actually be life-threatening to the person that has been diagnosed or is experiencing its signs and symptoms. But when it's chronic, what we usually see is that it develops over time. And while it's developing over time, even though it may be developing slowly, it can lead to permanent damage of the pancreas. And as we have discussed just now, we see that the pancreas is very important in not just producing these digestive enzymes, but also in producing the hormones that regulate our blood sugar as well. So, of course, if you have permanent damage to the pancreas, we can only assume that the downward effects of what is happening because of that permanent damage can be fatal to the person. And of course, the both forms, meaning the acute form of pancreatitis or the chronic form of pancreatitis, it actually disrupts the pancreas, the ability of the pancreas to function properly, leading to a lot of digestive issues. And of course, like I said before, problems with regulating one's blood sugar.
And what are some of the most common causes and risk factors associated with pancreatitis?
Right. So remember I said that pancreatitis in a lot of the cases can be preventable. But what we do see in terms of the common causes would be things like chronic heavy alcohol use. That is actually, I would say, the most common thing that we do see, the most common risk factor that we do see in a person that is being diagnosed with pancreatitis. And another common thing that we do see would be gallstones. So last week we touched a little bit on gallstones and how the gallbladder functions. But of course, that is a whole topic in itself because it comes with its own slew of complications, etc. But it is important for us to know that if you have been diagnosed with gallstones, that can also cause pancreatitis. But the main one that we really do focus on and the one that we really can see as preventable is that chronic heavy alcohol use. Now, gallstones itself, yes, it can block what we call the pancreatic duct, or that little duct in the pancreas that allows the enzymes to be released from the pancreas. So, of course, if we have a buildup of those digestive enzymes in the pancreas itself because something is blocking that tube to let it get out, that would lead to a lot of inflammation in the pancreas and, of course, pancreatitis. Now, alcohol abuse itself, yes, it can damage the pancreas over time. So we do see a lot of people who are addicted to alcohol or who drink alcohol on a daily basis, we do see that chronic pancreatitis occurring. But what we can see as well is that acute phase that is very sudden in onset and can be life-threatening. Now, there are other causes. If somebody has high triglyceride levels, if they're on certain medications, if they have certain genetic conditions, things like cystic fibrosis, these things can predispose to somebody to developing pancreatitis as well. Smoking, obesity, as well as a family history of pancreatitis. So, for example, if your mom suffered from pancreatitis, there's a higher likelihood that her children may suffer from pancreatitis, and especially so if their environmental or lifestyle factors, for example, obesity or chronic alcohol use, comes into play as well. And something that is very interesting as well is that in Trinidad and Tobago, we actually have a scorpion that causes pancreatitis, and it's called Tityus trinitatus. But it's not one of the most common causes, I would say. You really do see it down deep south, etc. But it really is something that is endemic to Trinidad and Tobago. So that scorpion itself that causes pancreatitis, you would really see that being caused mostly in Trinidad.
That is an interesting makes you want to stay away from any area that a scorpion may be found.
Exactly. Yes, but of course, the hospitals in South that we do see these people being diagnosed with pancreatitis because of the scorpion stings. Mm-hmm. They do have the anti-venom, so most people do recover very well.
And how do chronic pancreatitis differ from acute pancreatitis?
So in the acute pancreatitis, we see a very, very sudden onset, meaning that we see severe inflammation of the pancreas that will typically resolve in a few days or a few weeks with the adequate treatment. But with the chronic pancreatitis, it's really ongoing. It's long-lasting. It's a long-lasting inflammation, and it will progressively damage the pancreas, leading to sort of permanent scarring and loss of function, whether it be the function in producing those digestive enzymes or the function in regulating the blood sugar. So over time, we see that dissipating in a sort of a stepwise manner in the chronic pancreatitis. Now, chronic pancreatitis, what we also notice is that it often results from many acute bouts of acute pancreatitis, especially when it's related to alcohol abuse. So what tends to happen is that if we have somebody who is a heavy chronic drinker, they may have several bouts or several episodes of acute pancreatitis within the span of a year. So somebody may be hospitalized maybe twice for the year because of acute pancreatitis due to chronic alcohol abuse. But over time, those acute bouts or those acute episodes of pancreatitis will lead to chronic pancreatitis and, of course, permanent scarring and damage of the pancreas itself.
What symptoms should someone look out for that might indicate pancreatitis?
Right. So when we're talking about symptoms, the signs and symptoms of pancreatitis, this will really be dependent on whether somebody is experiencing an acute bout of pancreatitis or if they have chronic ongoing pancreatitis. Now, with the acute pancreatitis, it's usually very easy for us as healthcare workers to notice and to make that clinical diagnosis because they will present with a very sudden, severe abdominal pain that may actually radiate to the back. And what we sometimes see is that the person may find relief in leaning forward or leaning over. And that's because what tends to happen is that inflammation of the pancreas is actually, if you're standing upright, it actually, what it does is it irritates a nerve plexus right behind it. So the person is going to experience some sort of sudden severe abdominal pain. But when they lean forward, they take the pressure off that nervous plexus. And what tends to happen is that they feel some sort of relief within the abdominal area. So that usually is one of the signs we definitely look for if they have that severe abdominal pain and they have that relief in bending over. What also happens is that the person may have vomiting and nausea and sometimes fever, as well as their pulse rate or their heart rate may be very rapid because they're experiencing pain. They're experiencing all these different symptoms at once. So their heart may be beating faster to compensate for all these different things that is going on with their body as well. But when somebody is experiencing chronic pancreatitis, they may have some sort of persistent abdominal pain. It may not be as severe as in an acute phase. They may even experience weight loss. And what they may experience in their stools and things to look out for is if they experience fat or fat deposits within their stools themselves and any sort of sign of malnutrition. So if they have some sort of muscle wasting, if they are experiencing, you know, if they are losing weight at a rapid pace, all these things are also signs of chronic pancreatitis. And also if they've had a history of several bouts or several episodes of acute pancreatitis. But in both cases, medical intervention is definitely well.
All right, Doc, lunchtime, Doctor. Of course, base is in. It's rainy out there today. And you know when it rains, it's lots of traffic and lots of commotion. So we're talking...
Yes, it is.
Yeah, pancreatitis today.
We are talking pancreatitis today, and it is great to have you on, base.
Uh-huh.
We were just discussing the different functions of the pancreas and how pancreatitis is really... What we really do see is a clinical diagnosis for both acute pancreatitis and chronic pancreatitis. So some things for people to look out for in terms of themselves or maybe in family members would be if their family member or themselves, if they are chronic or heavy alcohol drinkers, if they have been diagnosed with gallstones, if they've had a family history of pancreatitis, and if they're experiencing sudden severe abdominal pain that may radiate to the back or is also relieved in leaning forward. And if they are experiencing lots of nausea and vomiting and fever and rapid pulse, all these things are things that should be taken seriously, and medical intervention is definitely necessary.
All right. So what are some of the, I don't know if you spoke about this already, the symptoms that someone should look out for that might indicate pancreatitis, which is some things you just mentioned there?
Yes, so in acute pancreatitis, definitely, and it's always necessary for us to constantly educate the public on these things to look out for, because as I said earlier, acute pancreatitis can be sudden and severe, but it can also be very life-threatening. So if you're experiencing, if you know you have a history of chronic alcohol abuse, a history of gallstones, as well as a history or family history of pancreatitis, and there are so many other causes of pancreatitis that we would really say are less common. The more common things that we do see would be chronic alcohol users or even gallstones. And if you do have a history of either of these things and experiencing sudden severe abdominal pain that radiates to the back, as well as it can be relieved on bending forward, nausea, vomiting, fever, rapid pulse, all these things are things that you need to take seriously and go to the hospital before any complications.
All right. We do have a call. Let's take this call. Hello, good afternoon.
This way.
Uh-huh.
Good afternoon.
Just a minute.
Collect your thoughts.
Yeah, I was eating. I have a terrible, I'm not diabetic. My numbers always get before and after me. But I have a terrible appetite. I feel like I could eat a plate of food every two hours. A good plate of food. I just want. Could you say what is that normal or what? Thanks a lot for listening.
So really and truly, somebody's appetite is, I would say it is based on an individual. So if somebody is working out every day and they generally have a proper metabolism and a proper appetite, it is fine to want to eat every 2 hours, every 3 hours. It is fine once.
Doc, are you there with us? You sort of broken up there. She's coming back. Once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sankey 106.1 and Sky 99.5. Of course, our numbers are 622-2257 and WhatsApp us at
3061065.
And she's gone again.
Yes.
Oh, yes, you're back with us. You're broken up for a little while. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. Sorry. So I was saying that if somebody's appetite is they need to eat every 2 hours, once you are working out, once you have a proper workout regime and you are exercising to burn off any excess calories throughout the day, because remember, weight loss and weight gain really is dependent on calories in versus calories out. So it is necessary for you to be working out. every day or exercising every day, if you do have an appetite every 2-3 hours and you want to eat a full plate of food, that is completely fine for somebody who works out on a daily basis.
All right, definitely. We do have another call coming in. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doc. I am 93 years of age. I am not a diabetic. Right? You hear me?
Yes, we hear you, sir, yes.
All right. What happened to me, I have a left watery eye, and it's oozing out some yellow stuff. I tried local medicine, it didn't work. I visited a eye specialist in Trinidad. He told me it's an infection, and in 2 weeks' time it will be cured.
Mm-hmm.
2 months gone, nothing happened. Recently, I was in Orlando, and I visited an eye specialist in Orlando, who told me it's an allergy. I used the medication she advised me to use, and up till now, nothing doing. I spoke to a relative of mine who is a gynecologist, and he said what I have is a block duct, and as a result, there is no cure for that. What can I do, Doc?
Okay, thank you, sir. Listen, affair.
It can be, yes. So it can be several different diagnoses based on what you are telling me. And usually the first thing that we do think of would be an infection in the eye. But a blocked duct can also lead to that yellow discharge as well as a watery eye. Now, in certain aspects, if it is not an infection, etc., there are no medications per se to fix a blocked duct. But there are managements and there are steps that you can take. For example, applying a warm compress to the affected eye to help soothe any sort of irritation and to encourage drainage of the duct itself. And of course, you want to avoid touching or rubbing the eye too much. And if you need to touch your eye for any reason, you're properly washed. And if the symptoms are getting any worse, for example, if you are noticing any pus, etc., coming out of the eye, or any blood or any sort of other discharge coming out of the eye, and it's getting worse where you are not seeing or you are losing your vision slowly, I definitely suggest going back to the ophthalmologist so that they can do what they need to do or manage you appropriately in that case.
All right, for 93 and going strong still, so take care of yourself there, sir. I just that we're talking about, it's not a pancreatic, nothing to do with pancreatic cancer. Can it lead to that, though? Oh, any symptoms?
So it can lead to, in some cases, pancreatitis can lead to pancreatic cancer. It is one of those conditions that we can see as a precursor, but once it is managed adequately, once the person does not develop a very severe bout of chronic pancreatitis, then they should be okay once the acute pancreatitis or the acute complications have cleared out. But we do see a lot of patients who have acute pancreatitis and they wait until a little too late and the pancreatitis becomes complicated. And that is when we see that it's very life-threatening. But individuals who do have hereditary pancreatitis or certain genetic mutations in their bodies that lead to pancreatitis, we see that those individuals are at a higher risk for pancreatic cancer.
All right, another question coming in here, but let's take a call first. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Yes, thanks again. I don't know what is the latest on turmeric, because I was watching YouTube last week and they said it causes serious liver problems. That and green tea. So I don't know what is the latest on this. I'll be listening off air. Thanks again.
So when we're talking about, well, this particular spice, turmeric does have certain anti-inflammatory properties and antioxidant effects, but what we really do see is that it does give a little bit of benefit in terms of joint health and heart health. But in terms of other disadvantages for the body, turmeric, too much of anything in particular, can have some sort of detrimental effect on the body. So it does cause the blood to become a bit thinner. So that can lead to, especially in persons who are taking blood thinning medication, that can lead to excessive bleeding, whether it be internally or externally. So it does have numerous potential health benefits, but you also have to be of the potential drawbacks of any sort of herbal medication, especially in high doses or when taken with other medications itself. So definitely, it is always best to consult your individual physician when you want to start anything, especially if you are on other medications, because you never know how they interact with the other medications and with your body as well.
All right, question I was getting to here. Good afternoon, doctor. Can you tell me what is meningitis disease? And please thank you for your interesting program and knowledge.
So meningitis, remember in the beginning of this particular program, we said that the word itis actually means inflammation. So when we talk about meningitis, it is actually characterized by the inflammation of the protective membranes of the brain and the spinal cord. And those protective membranes are called the meninges. So it's called meningitis because it's inflammation of the meninges. And this inflammation can be caused by many different things. So the most common, or the, I would say, the most life-threatening we do see is bacteria, viruses, and fungi. And in very rare cases, parasites can also cause meningitis. But there are non-infectious causes as well. Certain medications, autoimmune diseases, and even cancer can lead to meningitis. So bacterial meningitis definitely is the most severe form and the most life-threatening. And this really does require immediate medical attention. If you are noticing very high fever, a very severe headache, stiff neck, if the person has sensitivity to light, confusion, nausea, vomiting, and sometimes a rash, it is imperative that you do seek help. And sometimes you do see this in the pediatric or the children population, unfortunately. So if your child is experiencing any of these things, definitely medical attention is needed immediately. But meningitis itself is its own topic. It is very vast and very complicated. So maybe we can have an entire program surrounded or around meningitis itself.
All right. Another topic we could look into is Graves' disease. Graves' disease?
Yes, Graves. Oh, yes.
Graves, because that's what Vibes Cartel. Vibes Cartel has that Graves
disease. Yes, that's what Vibes Cartel has.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know about it.
That is a very good topic for us to look at as well.
All right, because a lot of people were not aware of it, you know?
Yes.
All right.
So I think that could be our next topic.
Okay.
Yes.
So how is pancreatitis diagnosed, and what tests and procedures are commonly done?
So I would say that pancreatitis definitely is a combination of a clinical evaluation. So meaning our history and our examination of the patient based on what they're telling us, what they're experiencing, that becomes very important in us diagnosing pancreatitis. That narrows down for us what exactly it could be. Because like I said before, pancreatitis, it does have this very sort of focused pain in the abdominal area, and it can be relieved by sitting forward. So that's usually the clinical picture that we do see when it comes to pancreatitis. But of course, after that, after we do that clinical evaluation, there are certain lab tests and imaging studies that we have to perform. So what we look for in the blood test would be the pancreatic enzymes, because like I mentioned before, pancreatitis is really caused by that influx of the digestive enzymes produced by the pancreas itself, basically eating away at the pancreas or causing some sort of inflammation in the pancreas. So the blood test would usually reveal elevated pancreatic enzymes, and most notably, we see amylase and lipase being elevated. Those are not really things that the general public need to know, but just to have a clear picture of what we look for those that elevated blood levels of pancreatic enzymes, and those are the key indicators of pancreatitis. And then we do have certain imaging tests that we will perform, ultrasounds, CT scans, and even MRI. We would use it to assess how the pancreas is looking, what exactly is the condition of the pancreas at this point, and identify any abnormalities within the pancreas, as well as check for any complications that may be surrounding this episode of pancreatitis. For example, if there's any collections of fluids around the pancreas, we can see it on an ultrasound or an MRI, or even if the pancreas is necrotic. And when we talk about necrotic tissue, we're talking about if there are parts of the pancreas that are actually dying. So all these tests allow us to diagnose pancreatitis, as well as diagnose any complications of pancreatitis, and basically get a gauge of what the function of this person's pancreas will be after we have treated them or after we have managed their condition.
And once again, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean. Can you discuss the potential complications that can arise from untreated or poorly managed pancreatitis?
Right. So this is why I'm saying that it is very important for somebody who is experiencing the signs and symptoms that I've mentioned, especially if they have a history of chronic alcohol use or a history of gallstones or a family history of pancreatitis. This is why I'm stressing that it's important that you get medical treatment as soon as possible, because untreated or poorly managed pancreatitis can definitely lead to some severe complications. So in acute pancreatitis, we do see complications such as pancreatic necrosis. And like I mentioned before, this would be death of the tissue of the pancreas. And if death of the pancreatic tissue occurs, the pancreas is not going to be able to perform its functions efficiently. Sometimes we do see abscesses or collections of pus within the pancreas. We do see something called a pseudocyst that can occur. And this would really be a cyst without a wall that is seen in the pancreas itself. And sometimes some persons in the acute pancreatitis can have systemic infections like sepsis. And that's why we see it is such a life-threatening condition, this acute pancreatitis, because what can happen is that it becomes complicated very quickly. And this can, if not managed properly, cause a person to lose their life. Now, in chronic pancreatitis, and this would be because of several different acute bouts of pancreatitis. In that chronic pancreatitis, we do see permanent scarring or permanent damage to the pancreas. And this will lead to conditions such as diabetes, malnutrition, and of course, the increased risk of pancreatic cancer that I mentioned before. And why does it lead to diabetes? Because, like I mentioned, the pancreas is responsible for regulating our blood sugar. So if the pancreas is permanently scarred, then the pancreas is no longer producing insulin, leading to diabetes and that elevated blood glucose. And of course, it will lead to malnutrition because the pancreas is no longer producing digestive enzymes to break down the food that we are eating, so that our body is no longer to absorb the nutrients that are necessary for our bodies to constantly be performing every day. But both forms of pancreatitis, whether it be the acute form or the chronic form, both forms are definitely life-threatening if they're not properly managed.
All right. And what are some of the long-term effects of the chronic pancreatitis on a person's health?
So chronic pancreatitis, it will have significant long-term effects. And this would be things like chronic pain. The person who is experiencing chronic pancreatitis will be in some sort of constant discomfort or pain because of that scarring that is occurring in the pancreas. The person is also going to experience malabsorption of nutrients because the permanent scarring is going to allow or not allow the pancreas to function efficiently. So they're not producing those enzymes to break down our foods into absorbable pieces. And of course, the chronic pancreatitis, like I mentioned before, diabetes is definitely something persons with chronic pancreatitis will have to look out for. And most importantly is that increased risk of pancreatic cancer. And the damage to the pancreas may also result in something we called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. And this is where the pancreas is no longer producing enough digestive enzymes, which is necessary for our food to be properly absorbed. And this will have its own detrimental effects. So weight loss, diarrhea, malnutrition. And I would say that managing these long-term effects will definitely require some sort of ongoing medical care. And of course, you need to have certain lifestyle changes to go with that.
Are we just about 60 minutes away from 1 o'clock? All right, so next question. What role, alcohol, I know you mentioned alcohol before, but what role does alcohol consumption play in the development of pancreatitis?
So alcohol consumption by itself is definitely one of the leading causes of both acute and chronic pancreatitis. So if somebody is a heavy or prolonged alcohol user, this can lead to the formation of what we call protein ducts of the pancreas. And if the pancreatic duct is plugged up or if it is blocked, what tends to happen is that there's no way for those digestive enzymes to go anywhere or go into the bloodstream. So what is going to happen is that because the pancreatic duct is blocked, it will cause a buildup of pancreatic enzymes within the pancreas itself, leading to inflammation. So these enzymes, they need to be able to break down something, whether it be fats, carbohydrates, sugars, all these different things. Though that is the function of those enzymes. They need to break down things. And if they are not escaping the pancreas to go and break down these things that we are putting into our body, it is going to break down the next best thing, which is the pancreas itself. So that blockage that is caused by protein plugs that we see in alcoholics or heavy alcohol users, that is a main cause of pancreatitis because it is leading to these digestive enzymes causing inflammation within the pancreas itself. And of course, over time, this repeated inflammation, so like I mentioned before, alcohol abusers or heavy alcohol abusers definitely will have several different bouts of acute pancreatitis, especially if they continue to constantly drink alcohol even after they've been hospitalized for an acute bout of pancreatitis. And these several bouts of pancreatitis will, of course, lead to chronic pancreatitis with scarring and permanent damage to the pancreas. So I would say, and I would definitely suggest, that reducing alcohol intake is one of the most effective ways to prevent pancreatitis. Earlier in today's show, I said that pancreatitis can definitely be preventable in a lot of the cases, and this is why. Reducing alcohol intake and reducing the amount of alcohol that you consume is definitely and has been proven to be one of the most effective ways to prevent pancreatitis.
Honorable, besides, you know, staying away from the alcohol, what are some of the dietary or lifestyle changes that can help prevent or manage pancreatitis?
So there are many dietary and lifestyle changes that I would say play a significant role in not just preventing but managing pancreatitis as well. So for those at risk, like I said, reducing the alcohol intake or abstaining altogether is definitely essential, especially if you have experienced pancreatitis in the past. A low-fat diet can help to reduce the strain on the pancreas if somebody has experienced pancreatitis. So having a diet that is low in fats, and earlier on in the program, I also mentioned that persons who have a high triglyceride level or even those who are obese are also at risk for developing pancreatitis. So a low-fat diet will not just help in managing pancreatitis, but also help in managing some of the risk factors for pancreatitis. Eating smaller or more frequent meals can also ease the digestion load on the pancreas itself, because the amount of food that we eat is going to tell the pancreas, well, we need to produce X amount of digestive enzymes to be able to break down this food. So eating smaller meals, but more frequently, can ease that load of digestion for the pancreas itself. And for people with chronic pancreatitis, there are actually pancreatic enzyme supplements that can be taken with their meals to improve some sort of nutrient absorption and digestion. But of course, before doing all these things, if you are diagnosed with chronic pancreatitis, it is always best to consult with your doctor before taking any other supplements, because these things can also interact with certain supplements you may be taking. So they will advise you accordingly if you have been diagnosed with chronic pancreatitis.
What are some of the generic factors of pancreatitis?
So there are genetic factors that can play a role in developing pancreatitis. So some people may have certain genetic mutations that can predispose them to developing pancreatitis. And unfortunately for them, it may not be that these specific genes will present itself or will express themselves, and the person will definitely be predisposed to pancreatitis. But what the research has shown is that certain gene mutations or certain genetic factors have been found to play a role in persons who have had pancreatitis in the past. And there are also certain medical conditions, things like cystic fibrosis also significantly increase the risk of somebody developing pancreatitis over time. People also with that have been diagnosed with certain autoimmune conditions, or like I said before, high levels of triglycerides and high levels of calcium or hypercalcemia, have also been found to be at an increased risk of pancreatitis. So if they have other medical conditions that predispose them to high triglycerides or high calcium, this can be something that predisposes them to pancreatitis as well.
And for just about 9 more minutes away from 1 o'clock, remember, if you have any other medical questions, feel free to message us at 308-1065 or 622-2257. We're talking about pancreatitis today with Dr. Brittany Dean, the lunchtime doctor, right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1 and Sky 99.5. So how can individuals reduce their risk of developing pancreatitis, especially those with a family history of the condition? Is it really hereditary?
So it can be hereditary in some cases, like I said. Some people may have those genetic factors that just predispose them to pancreatitis, especially if they have certain gene mutations, etc. But what we've also found is that if you do have a family history of pancreatitis, that may also tie into those gene mutations, meaning that it can be hereditary in cases where that genetic factor or those gene mutations play a role. But if it is caused by, you know, somebody or a family member such as your father or mother who have had a chronic heavy alcohol abuse, and that is what caused them to develop pancreatitis. Now, if you have a different environment and you have a proper healthy lifestyle, then your risk of developing pancreatitis may be lower. But there may, like I said before, if it's because of those gene mutations within the family, then there may be a higher risk of you being predisposed to pancreatitis if a family member, such as a mother or father who was not a drinker, developed pancreatitis over time. Now, in terms of reducing the risk, definitely I would suggest that if your mom or dad or some family member that is close to you have developed pancreatitis, by in order to reduce the risk, one of the main things that you can do is avoiding alcohol or reducing alcohol intake. And of course, you want to avoid smoking as well, because smoking has also been a risk factor that has been seen to increase your risk of pancreatitis. Of course, not as much as alcohol, but definitely avoid smoking, because avoiding smoking by itself is not just going to prevent pancreatitis, but it's going to prevent a whole host of different complications throughout the body as well. You want to also maintain a healthy diet that is low in fats, and you want to manage any other underlying conditions. So, like I said, if you have a condition that causes high triglycerides and a condition such as diabetes, you don't want to put any other strain on the pancreas. So it is definitely imperative, especially if you do have diabetes, that you take care of yourself in such a way where you are doing anything that you can to reduce any sort of stress on the pancreas. So those with a family history of pancreatitis, I would say, need to be extra vigilant or extra cautious about their lifestyle factors. And definitely, you will benefit from regular medical checkups to monitor your pancreatic health. So it really is imperative that you manage any sort of risk factor that can lead to pancreatitis in the long run, especially if you have a family history of pancreatitis. Right, and earlier on, we did,
let's get this message on the WhatsApp here. There's a message.
Afternoon, Doc. Mm-hmm. Good program as usual. I just want to find out the pancreas, right? So is it that if you eat too much sweet, is because you overwork the pancreas and that will cause it not to produce the insulin? Or is it because of the age or stuff like that? That what caused the pancreas not to produce the insulin? Could you let me know, please? Thanks.
Right. So in terms of diabetes and eating sweets, etc., there are several different types of diabetes. So we know that there's type 1 and type 2. Now, in type 1 diabetes, the pancreas is responsible, in the average person, the pancreas is responsible for producing insulin, which is important. For example, insulin is that key that opens the door to our tissues that allows glucose to go within these tissues and give us energy. Now, in type 1 diabetes, what tends to happen is that the pancreas does not produce any sort of insulin at all. So they need to get their insulin from an external source. And that is why type 1 diabetics, they need to inject themselves with insulin so that they can manage their blood glucose. Now, in type 2 diabetes, it is what tends to happen is that there's insulin resistance. So the insulin that is produced by the pancreas is not functioning adequately. So the pancreas is actually producing the insulin to combat the level of sweets. But because it becomes the body becomes overloaded by this level of sweets, what tends to happen is that the insulin does not work as effectively. And also what tends to happen is that the pancreas will not produce enough insulin to keep your blood sugar levels normal. So there's so much sugar within the blood, the pancreas is not producing enough insulin to combat that level of blood sugar. But what I'm stating in chronic pancreatitis is that what can happen is that there's so much scarring on the pancreas itself that the same effects from a type 1 diabetic may occur, meaning that the pancreas no longer is producing that insulin to combat the blood sugar levels. So that person may develop diabetes over time because the pancreas in chronic pancreatitis no longer is producing insulin.
All right,
I hope that answered the question.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. So as we wrap it up with just about 2 minutes, what advancements in medical research or treatment options are available for pancreatitis today?
So there have been a lot of recent advancements for pancreatitis treatment, and we have better diagnostic tools. We have something called endoscopic ultrasound, and we even have something called MRCP, which allows for a more accurate assessment and early detection of complications. Endoscopic procedures, meaning that we take a camera and go into the body, have also improved, and this actually has enabled less invasive treatments for certain complications that I mentioned. There's also research that has been ongoing into gene therapy, regenerative medicine, and of course new drugs to manage any pain and inflammation to offer better outcomes for persons who have been diagnosed with pancreatitis. But like I always say, prevention is better than cure. So if you know that you have a risk factor, for example, chronic or heavy alcohol use, definitely try to avoid alcohol or decrease your alcohol intake as much as possible to prevent any future complications.
All right, Doctor, thank you very much for your informative program today. Looking forward to hearing from you tomorrow with another edition of the Lunchtime Doctor.
Thank you. Enjoy your day. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Well, you've been listening to another edition of the Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 FM, and Sangeet 106.1. It's wet out. Be safe on the roads and do enjoy the rest of your day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.